Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, March 12th, 2009. It is now about 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversized and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. We are pleased this morning to have Dr. Catherine Albrecht as our guest. She is a popular media commentator, dynamic radio personality, and author or co-author of 6 books and videos, including bestseller Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. Please call us by calling with your questions 646-652-4620, and let's see if she's on the line now. Good morning.
Good to be on your program.
Good. Is that you, Doctor?
Indeed it is.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Well, you called in a little early. I hope I didn't keep you holding too long.
Nope. I'm glad to be joining you here.
That's great. Well, I want to say that I'm so pleased that you have accepted our offer to be our guest this morning. I've had more comments from people, even people in my family, say, oh, you're having her on the program. Oh, I'm so excited. and I was so pleased to hear that. And I really appreciate the fact that you're taking 30 minutes out of your busy schedule to speak with us this morning. And I'm delighted as all get out. And I'm also curious because we're going to discuss a subject that I know actually very, very little about. So for my benefit and for the benefit of the audience, could you please tell us a little bit about how you what is RFID basically? And I've done my research and I have many questions, but I'll save them for later. And also, how did you decide to champion this cause out of the thousands of causes out there that need to be championed, so to speak? So I'll let you go to it.
I'll tell you, there certainly is a lot that we need to be working on, and I appreciate your kind words there about having me on the show. I also want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to add another voice in favor of freedom out there to the airwaves. I think it's so crucial that people be spreading the word, and I have the greatest admiration for what you're doing, so I really want to thank you as well.
Oh, thank you.
It's an honor and a privilege to be on your program today. Let me see if I can answer your question about RFID, and probably the best place to start is just what do the letters mean. I think it's hard even for people to get those letters straight. But the RF part of RFID stands for radio frequency. The ID part, of course, is an ID, just like an ID card or an identification. And when you put it together, you get identification through radio waves or radio frequency identification. Now, what this technology looks like, at least today, is tiny microchips, in some cases as small as a speck of dust, that are hooked up to miniature antennas. Now, the antennas don't look like the antenna on an AM radio. They typically look like a flat sticker, perhaps, maybe the size of a postage stamp, maybe as big as a credit card. But they are a strip of wire, typically copper wire, that is wrapped around on a flat surface that the microchip uses to pick up energy from the environment to power it, because they don't have batteries typically. And then also it uses that antenna to send out its information. So let me give you a scenario here, and this is a very frightening scenario. I've been working on this issue since 2002 when I first discovered the existence of RFID being created in a, I wouldn't quite call it top secret, but certainly a closed door laboratory at MIT. It was originally founded back in 1999, the group that created this, by Procter & Gamble and Gillette, which have since merged to become the world's biggest consumer product company, and of course Walmart, which is the world's biggest retailer, and other giants like Kraft, Nestle, Kimberly-Clark, International Paper, Coca-Cola, Kodak, Home Depot, you name it. These guys were all on board working around the clock to develop a technology that they could use to essentially put a radio or a radio tracking tag onto every physical object manufactured on Earth. So their plan is ultimately to use this technology to replace the barcode. So every pair of shoes, every light bulb, every pencil, every book, every Bible, every physical object on Earth would be implanted with one of these microchip tracking devices in the factory at the point of manufacture. Now, the implications here are absolutely staggering. What these folks want to create, and believe me, they've certainly put the money into doing it, and they have the political, social, and certainly economic clout to pull it off. They want to create something that they call the Internet of Things. And one way to understand the Internet of Things, a lot of people nowadays are using social networking websites like Facebook.
Yes.
Where, you know, you can anticipate a time when everybody, at least everybody under the age of maybe 25 or 30, would have their own Facebook page. So if you want to know about Catherine Albrecht, you could log on to Facebook, find my Facebook page, and you could get all sorts of information of who my friends are and how they interact with me, and maybe I'd post stuff about where I've been and what I've been doing.
Right.
Or Twitter is a good example. People
right.
post on there, gee, I'm going to the grocery store now.
Right. Very, tracking your every move.
Yes, exactly. Now, what they envision is a sort of a Twitter or a Facebook for every physical item on the planet. So now imagine that instead of me making choices about what I'd like to post on Facebook or Twitter, what I'd like people to know about me, now it is my shoe. And my shoe would come from the factory pre-implanted with a microchip implant in the sole of the shoe, probably pressed between the layers of the leather or the rubber of my shoe. I may not even know that it is there. It would have been put there by the manufacturer over in China or Singapore or wherever your shoes are made. And when I buy that shoe, there would be a scanner in place at the Walmart check stand that would run the shoe over the scanner, just like we do with a barcode. But they would capture this unique ID number out of the microchip and add the information to this web page on the shoe. So envision a web page where it says this shoe was manufactured in China at the, you know, Shenzhen shoe manufacturing plant. Then it was loaded onto a big container ship and it arrived in San Francisco Harbor. Then it got onto a train and went across the country to a distribution center. Then it went into a warehouse. Then it went into a Walmart shelf. And that's the information we know about it so far. Here's what it's made out of. Here's what kind of slave labor worked to make it. And finally now, a new entry gets made into this internet page on this shoe. And the new entry says, aha, well, on March 12th, 2009, Dr. Catherine Albrecht stood in that Walmart store and bought that particular shoe using this particular credit card.
So that's now, that brave new world. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. And as an aside, let me just put a disclaimer in there. I do not shop at Walmart. I've boycotted them now for a number of years, ever since learning of their pivotal role in promoting this technology.
I will
not fund the beast. I don't give them a single thin red cent out of my wallet. I avoid that store like the plague. And in fact, as I've said on my own radio show, I would rather dig grubs out of my backyard if it came down to it than walk into Walmart to buy food.
I don't shop there. Now, learning this, I shall join you in that quest.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you look at what Walmart's done to our country, not only in terms of shipping jobs overseas and putting American manufacturing out of business, but very disturbingly, this RFID agenda that they have single-handedly promoted is going, I believe, to be the destruction of our liberties and the destruction of our privacy in this country. It's going to lead to tyranny, and we'll have Walmart to thank for it. I also should say as a disclaimer that I don't use credit cards at all. I make all of my purchases in cash. I can't remember the last time I used a credit card because of their tracking capability and because of the privacy advocate. I'm intimately familiar with what can be done with the data from credit cards. So anyway,
right.
Backing up to my other scenario, I'm standing there at the check stand at a Walmart store with a credit card in hand, and this will tell you why I don't do those things.
Right.
At that point, they scan my shoe. They pick up the unique ID number from the microchip in the shoe, and let's say that's 308247, et cetera. Then into that 308247, of course, links up to that Internet of Things page on my shoe. So now a new entry goes in there, and it says, bought by Dr. Catherine Albrecht on March 12th at a Walmart store in Boston, Massachusetts. All right. Now, a network of reader devices in the environment, and I know people are going, she's going way over the top, but I'm going to give you evidence this is actually in the works and being installed as we speak. So now a network of reader devices installed in public locations would be capable of picking up the information from my shoe, and yet another entry gets added to the database. Now, let me give you some background on this. IBM has developed something called the Person Tracking Unit. And what the Person Tracking Unit is the reader devices that stimulate and pick up the signals from these tags. Okay. So if I have a tag in my shoe, it's got a microchip and an antenna. It has no battery or no power. So 99% of the time, it just lies there dormant doing nothing.
All right.
But when it gets within range of a reader device, like one of IBM's Person Tracking Units,
right,
it wakes up. So what the reader does is it sends out a steady stream of electromagnetic radiation, and whenever a tagged item comes within range of it, it picks up that radiation and uses it to turn itself on. And at that point, it then releases, sort of dumps its data back into the air where it gets picked back up by that Person Tracking Unit, and voila, you've just done a sort of invisible silent handshake, a data handshake with a reader.
Right, so someone read you. They're reading you then, basically.
That's the idea. So what IBM envisions doing is using this capability in the form of these Person Tracking Units. So they could, for example, put a reader device in a doorway. And as you walk through the doorway, you wouldn't even know it was there. You certainly couldn't see or smell or taste the electromagnetic radiation, the energy waves beaming into that doorway. But all of the tags on everything you're wearing and carrying would pick up that energy and release their data as a result of being near it. So as you walk through the doorway now, everything in your backpack, in your pocket, if you're a woman, every item in your purse, everything down to the size and color of your underwear would all be transmitted invisibly to that doorway. So the doorway would kind of do an invisible frisk and sort of shake you down for all this information. And of course, because radio waves travel through the things we normally rely on to protect our privacy, it means that they could travel right through your, right through your purse or your backpack or your pocket. So that's the idea. And when you look at IBM, now again, IBM, one of the biggest, most powerful technology companies on the globe, with deep ties to the government, and they're big into this stuff. They envision placing these Person Tracking Units everywhere, and I mean everywhere. They picture them in doorways, hidden under floor tiles, in ceiling tiles, in shelving, in walls, and they want to put them everywhere we go, in airports, bus stations, train stations, into sports arenas, shopping malls, theaters, public libraries, literally everywhere, museums, even elevators and public restrooms. So that every place you go, you will be identified, and not only will you be identified based on the fact that you are the person who bought that pair of shoes, but an entire inventory of what you're wearing and carrying can be made. A timing, they can actually set off little timers and watch, how long do you stand in the bathroom? How long do you stand in front of the pregnancy test kits, or how long do you linger in the liquor aisle at your local liquor store? You know, all of these sorts of things can be monitored and tracked. They can determine who you walk into the restaurant with, who you sit down with, how long you stand next to somebody at the water cooler. Every bit of this information will be trackable, or we will become trackable, because of all of these spy chipped items that these companies envision us carrying and wearing.
Doctor, that is absolutely frightening.
It's mind-blowing. I'll tell you, when I first found out about this, this is what inspired me and my co-author, Liz McIntyre, to spend several years of our lives writing the book Spy Chips. And we wrote it. It was published originally at the end of 2005. It was re-released as a paperback by Penguin in 2006. And I kind of regret that because we were ahead of our time by about 4 or 5 years. Had the book come out today, which I believe it should be re-released almost verbatim what we released, then it would be essentially telling you what's happening in the world right now. In 2005, I've sort of been cursed by generally being about 5 years ahead of the curve. I live in the future, not the present.
Right, I can see that.
Definitely, when we were researching this, we went through 30,000 different documents. These were planning and strategic documents by these companies talking about how they intended to use the technology. And now here we are 3-4 years later, and they're using it in precisely those ways. Let me give you the most chilling scenario of all. Janet Napolitano, who was recently appointed by President Barack Obama to head up the Department of Homeland Security, recently made some statements that made my blood run cold. What she said is that the government is moving away from this national ID card concept of real ID, which a lot of liberty-loving people have been fighting tooth and nail in states across the country. There's been a nationwide rebellion against this notion of a national ID card. So what Janet Napolitano came out and said a couple weeks ago is, well, that's all right, so we'll let you states win on that. We'll dump real ID. And what we'll replace it with is something called an enhanced driver's license. Now, the minute I heard that, I jumped bolt upright out of my chair and wanted to jump up on the roof and start screaming at anybody who would listen to me. An enhanced driver's license is the worst possible. Just imagine your worst nightmare scenario of everything I just described, and now multiply it by 1,000, and you've got the enhanced driver's license. What this is a spy-chipped, RFID-tagged driver's license that can be read by anybody right through your pocket, wallet, purse, or backpack from 30 feet away in any direction. So you've got a 60-foot diameter around you of a data cloud that you would be emitting by putting this thing in your wallet. It would contain a single unique ID number, which I will say right here, I'll predict it and I will be right, that will become your national ID number.
Right.
A single unique number contained on this real ID, or excuse me, enhanced driver's license. So forget about the Social Security number. That's going to be passe. Your new ID number is going to be your national ID card number. It will be contained in this card. It can be picked up by anybody with a reader. Here's the freaky part. They intentionally selected the least secure form of RFID possible on the market today to do this. And I will repeat that. They intentionally selected the least secure form of RFID to put into these driver's licenses.
Wow.
Now, when I say that, there are versions of RFID that can be encrypted. There are versions of RFID that use special protocols that require special readers in order to read. There are lots of ways to increase the security just a little bit on these RFID tags. Well, what these guys chose to do, what the State Department and the Department of Homeland Security have been doing with these driver's licenses, is making them accessible to all and sundry. Meaning that the same readers that you would use in a Walmart warehouse or a Procter & Gamble distribution center will pick up from 30 feet away your national ID number right off of your driver's license, right through your purse. So the idea here that we would have uniquely, remotely identifiable tracking devices placed by the government into our identity documents is one of the most shocking things I have ever heard in my 10 years of advocacy. I have never heard anything so outlandish. We should be taking to the streets with pitchforks over this. There is absolutely no way that any thinking person would ever accept one of these into their wallets. It's going to make us targets for Big Brother government officials, targets for marketers and spammers who would love to track us all around, targeters for domestic violence, for stalking, for abuse of all sorts, theft, even potentially murder and assassination for people in positions of in sensitive positions. So it's just an absolutely abysmally bad idea, but it does tell you one thing, and that is that we are moving at a breakneck speed. If we were going 30 miles an hour last year, we're going 60 miles an hour this year. We're going to be going 120 miles an hour next year. We are moving at an accelerated pace towards a world in which you and I will not even recognize the world around us, because it will be so micromanaged and micro-controlled. And all of that ultimately is taking place because there is a spiritual battle afoot. And if people don't get that yet, they're going to start getting it here in the next couple of months, the next couple of years, as this thing that wants to encompass the earth and track us and control us begins manifesting itself in a more and more visible way. And I think at that point people will get, I get why this is happening so fast and why every development seems to be bad. There is a much, much bigger picture afoot here, and it's one that's been going on for thousands of years and is just now reaching its full culmination, and it's going to happen through these technologies.
Doctor, we have a caller. Let's see what this caller has to say. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please, and your question.
This is Jim from Tulsa.
Oh, Jim.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hey, Jim. Good to hear from you. What's your question?
Dr. Albrecht, first of all, I find this topic fascinating. I've listened to you on your radio show, and I just thank you and commend you for all you're doing to bring awareness to these issues and educate people about this. It's frightening, and your research and efforts are again to be commended. I'm not a highly technical person, and I just want, my question is just more of a personal nature. I became aware of this issue about 3 years ago when I watched Freedom to Fascism. And I just wondered if you can tell me about your contribution to that film and what it was like working with the late Aaron Russo.
What an extraordinary experience that was. I got to tell you, that movie, I believe, that one single film has done more to wake up America than every other thing I can think of combined. Just an extraordinary, it came at the right moment, was done in the right way, and Aaron Russo was an absolute genius at what he did. I believe that that film was single-handedly responsible for the Ron Paul Revolution, which brought millions of young people and older people as well into a greater awareness of the fraud and deception within the Federal Reserve, within our taxation system, how a handful of extremely wealthy individuals are controlling the world and managing the president and all the people that we are told are in charge is just a bunch of hollow puppets, that there really is a cabal of power afoot, and it's been around for a while, and that's really what we're up against. Aaron Russo, we filmed that movie at his home in California, actually in Hollywood, and showing up at his house and being ushered in by his very gracious partner, Heidi, meeting Aaron in person after having spoken to him on the phone a number of times was just an extraordinary experience. And then I had the added bonus that on that day that we were doing filming in Aaron's home, that Edward G. Griffin, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, was also there with us.
Oh,
we were
wow.
Yeah, so it was cool. We he'd film Ed for 20 minutes or a half an hour, and then he'd get some questions from me, and he'd go, oh, I got to ask Catherine something. Hang on. And then he'd set me up. And then film me, and then at the end of all of this, we all sat down and broke bread and had a meal together in Aaron's house after a day of work well done. So that was really an amazing experience. There's another piece to this, I should tell you, that I played a small role in expanding that film from its original goal. When I first got the phone call, and it was Vernie Coogland, I think I got her name right, the tax activist who hooked us up. She and I had, she had heard me speak at a previous event about a year before. She heard that Aaron was going to be making this movie on taxes. And she said, you know, great. Of course, Aaron contacted her because she was a tax activist. And she said, you've really got to talk to Catherine Albrecht, because she's been doing research about how the taxes all tie in and the monetary system is going to tie in with these microchips. And so Aaron, of course, as you may know, if you've seen his video on, you know, YouTube or elsewhere, he actually was told by David Rockefeller that the microchips were part of a global plan to control the world. Yeah. It's like straight out of a movie here. But he was personal friends back in the 1970s, in sort of the heyday of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture there in California. And he and David Rockefeller would do cocaine together. I mean, they would you know, totally hang out. You know, at that time, Aaron was a big time movie producer, working with Bette Midler and Eddie Murphy and those guys.
Sure.
And so he would hang out with David Rockefeller, who at one point told him that the microchip was part of a long term plan. and that these guys were essentially going to enslave the rest of us. And he invited Aaron to get on board and say, you know, hey, join us. We can probably get you a governorship somewhere. I'm telling you, this is how this stuff works. It blows your mind. You know, we think we elect the governors. Ha. It doesn't work that way. So Aaron, even then, even sort of in his, you know, drug-crazed youth, I think, and he never was really a heavy druggie, but, you know, even in that party environment, I think quickly said, no way, that's a terrible idea. So when Vernie said, Catherine Albrecht can talk to you about the microchip, he jumped at the chance. I remember I was standing in a Kinko's. I was doing some photocopying, and my cell phone rang, and it was Aaron Russo. I didn't know who he was. Uh-huh. He said, hey, you know, my name's Aaron Russo. I'm making this movie. Somebody told me I ought to talk to you. You know, essentially, you got like 2 minutes to convince me, lady. And you can see that, knowing what Aaron's like. You know, he's
yeah.
so gruff. And he said, so, you know, give me your best shot here. And so I said, well, yeah, let me talk to you about it. And then he says, well, my movie really isn't about chips. It's about the tax system. And I said, well, what's your solution? And here's where it really got interesting. He said, well, my solution is I think we need to move to a national sales tax. And, of course, you know, the fair tax people are out there pushing for that. Well, that's the worst thing that could ever happen on like 100 different levels. I've done radio shows on this. I've written essays on this. Fair tax is an absolute deception, and it probably will ultimately be imposed, a global sales tax. But what that's going to mean is you will not be able to buy or sell anything. Strains of Mark of the Beast should be emanating now. You won't be able to buy or sell anything without identifying yourself to pay your individual sales tax rate, and that's what's going to come. So I explained this to Aaron, literally standing in a Kinko's. I felt like I was dancing for all I had at an audition here to try to get him to agree to put this in his movie. And by the time I was done, he said, wow, you've totally changed the direction I want to take this whole thing. We got to get you out here. So within, I don't know, like 2 weeks, I was in California filming the movie, and the rest, of course, is history.
Wow. That's a great story, and thanks so much for sharing it with me. And I know that you can take this topic and go into the motives and the conspiratorial nature of the, you know, the global impact of this, and you kind of enlightened me and brought a smile to my face, because, like I said, that movie is very powerful, and may Aaron rest in peace. But thanks so much for your answer.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate your phone call, and thanks for the question.
You're welcome.
And yeah, and I just wish Aaron was still here today so he could see what an impact that he's had. I like to think that you know, he's up there in heaven getting smiling on all of us as we try to work with the beginnings that he gave us.
I agree. Well, you're an inspiration for all of us. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah. And I also should point out, Joe, that if people would like to catch my daily radio show, that they can catch me through the Internet and on a number of local stations. So maybe I could put in a plug, see if we could get some listeners.
Oh, yeah, please. Why don't you take a minute out and alert our audience how they can learn more about this. You only had 30 minutes. We have a couple of minutes left. Please use those. I can listen to you for hours, honestly, and I have about 42 questions, but you don't have 3 days to stay on the radio program. May I make one comment, please? And you said any thinking person. You made a comment that any thinking person would analyze this or something along those lines, and the first thing I thought of, therein lies our problem. We do not have thinking people. I have a friend of mine who I called who has a small farm. He has cattle and stuff, and I'm sorry, I'm from New York City. I know cattle have 4 feet, you know, and that's about it. And I asked him about it. He says, "Well, yes, it's a way for to enhance the situation with the disease and all this." And he thought it was very positive. And I said, "Well, how do you?" He's a progressive. You know, most of my friends are progressives, which means government is good, big government is better, humongous government is fantastic. You know, and I said, "Well, how do you envision this working?" He says, "Well, I realize the devil's in the details." In other words, they want to look at the altruistic point of view, saying, "Oh, look at the good that we're doing," but they don't want to look behind. They don't want to open the curtains. They don't want to look behind the scenes and say, "You know, this is what's actually going to happen." They'd rather be blind to that. And that's exactly what he was telling me. Now, I don't argue with my friends in that regard because it's futile. I said, fine, I just want to see what his position was. And his position was, now this guy is, by the way, brilliant. This is what bothers me. He's absolutely brilliant, but from when it comes to economics and when it comes to your freedom in politics, I mean, he's a progressive. He dismisses everything.
Yeah.
So it really disturbed me that he had nothing. He had no reservations about it. That's what bothered me. And he's a thinking person. So when we say all thinking people, first of all, very few people are thinking, and those that are thinking that are progressives, I think they're going to think in the wrong direction. But I'm sorry for my diatribe, but I had to throw that in.
I believe that they're going to be in for a rude awakening. I really do. I think that as we begin to realize that there is no such thing as left and right, there is only freedom and control.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. And I think people are waking up in large numbers. Every day more people wake up. We've got the internet, we've got books, we've got radio programs such as your own. We've got so many avenues through which people can hear the truth that you really almost have to stuff cotton in your ears.
That's right.
And close your eyes in order not to see it or hear it. Now, that's not to say that there are people who won't do that. I think a majority of people will do that because they don't want to know. Because once you know, look what it makes you do, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, look what it's made me do. 10 years of my life, this is all I do.
Right.
Look what it's made you do. I mean, we're up here, you're up at 6:30 in the morning doing a radio program. See, that's the thing about truth, is once you recognize it, once you acknowledge it, once you incorporate it into your life, you must act. And
right.
See, most people are lazy. They would rather let you and me do all of the hard work.
Well, you know,
if there is a risk, Joe and Catherine have it covered. I'm just going to kick back and watch another hour of TV because it's easier that way.
Right. Well,
and the other thing about it, I've fought a lot of battles and won. I've fought a lot of battles and lost. Mm. And, when you fight a battle, when you really pour everything you've got and all of your brain power and your muscle power and your finances and everything else you have into a battle and you lose brutally, I got to tell you, that's one of the worst feelings you can ever have. So, now, I'm just telling you this so we can have compassion on our fellow men and women here, that many people, I don't think, have the strength to fight those kind of battles knowing that there's a good chance that they will lose. And when you look at the size and the power and the momentum of this behemoth that is coming at us,
right?
I'll tell you, there is a tendency to want to run and hide, man, because this thing is big, it is well-financed, it is global.
Right.
And sometimes, if you're not careful, there's a real tendency to say, we're just flesh and blood little mini humans here. How are we going to fight this thing?
And,
rather than fight it and lose, I think a lot of people, it's kind of like, you feel a lump and you don't want to go to the doctor to find out it might be cancer. You'd rather just ignore it.
That's right.
It is cancer and you got to recognize it. You might not be able to win against it. It may kill you.
Yeah. You ever watch these programs on TV, science fiction programs, where I never really understand them because they're much too complex for my brain, but there's a bunch of freedom fighters fighting the evil empire, so to speak, and they're on some planet and there's only a few living in caves and they're fighting everybody. I almost feel that's what we're doing. I mean, we're these freedom fighters out there and we're fighting this mammoth governmental force on us. And now, as you know, I make hundreds of thousands of dollars broadcasting every year on this thing. I pay for everything myself. I take no advertisers. So not only is it my time, but my money and aggravation. And every once in a while, I get so down, I allude to the fact that I'm not going to broadcast anymore. And do you know, I get emails. I received an email once from a Chinese national living in Malaysia that literally made me cry. He said,
wow.
Don't give up. We need you. I mean, it was, I never expected it. In a million years, never expected it. And those are those instances that make you keep going. Just like this program, you motivated me to carry the torch. And I need that once in a while because I get so discouraged. I feel like I'm talking to thin air and nothing is happening. So
well,
I appreciate
you've got to recognize that regardless of what the outcome is going to be, and I talk about this all the time on my show, the one thing that we have total control over, which isn't a lot, because we certainly don't have control over the bad guys,
right.
But we have total control over ourselves and how we respond.
Right.
And at the end of this battle, when all the dust settles, those of us who fought on the side of right, as opposed to those people who are just going to coast and ride the evil wave,
right,
those of us who did the right thing, we're going to be able to look our Maker in the eye, and we're going to hear those words, well done, good and faithful
That's
servant.
Right,
we're
exactly.
We're going to be able to look in the mirror
right.
and like who we see and say, you know what, I did my best. I
right.
did what I knew how to do. I saw the threat. I rose to the occasion, and I fought. And, you know, there is nothing but honor. In a battle well fought, regardless of the outcome, there's nothing
right.
but honor there. And we are going to be the ones with that honor. And I got to tell you, that really makes it worthwhile. I would prefer to be battling here in a place of honor than slinking around in the shadows watching TV and pretending like this battle wasn't even happening.
Right.
So I definitely want to encourage you. There's also something I want you to read.
Sure.
There is, if you do a search, and don't use Google anymore, because Google is evil times a thousand.
Oh, that's right. I noticed that on your website. You said there was another one. What is it called?
IxQuick. 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 And they're about to rebrand their name per my my guidance here.
I will put that on my
They're
computer.
About to rename themselves StartPage. So start caring about your privacy with StartPage.
Okay.
And what StartPage is a search engine alternative to Google. Because don't even get me going on Google. We could do a whole other show on them. They are over the top, out of control. They want to become, and I'm not making this up, they want to become an artificial intelligence that merges with your brain. That is ultimately their goal. Google co-founder Larry Page said he wants to be the mind of God. That's actually what they want Google to become. And believe me, they're fast on the road to doing it. They are now, somebody just got an email, or not an email, a postal mail from their HMO. Inside of which was tucked a little Google insert. And he said, why is Google advertising in my HMO bill? And then he looks at it more carefully, and it says, Google now is managing your electronic medical record. Log on to Google, and you can see a record of every doctor's visit, every prescription you've had filled. And it was mind-blowing that his HMO would turn all this over to Google. But there it was, searchable right there on the Internet. So, yikes. We absolutely must stop using Google. And if you don't believe me,
okay.
just
all
do
right.
some,
you've
research
you,
on that. But here's what I want you to search for, and I want you to use StartPage.com, not Google. StartPage, also known as
Is it Start? S-A-R?
They're the ones who... They don't make any record of your searches. They don't have any databases okay. on any of their users. They don't record what you look for. And I have certified them. They have a third-party certification.
Okay.
And I actually sat in a several-hour meeting while they went through all of the technical steps that they go through to ensure your privacy. And I was blown away. I think they're terrific.
And that's Start, so, S-C-A-R-T?
That's it. Start okay. page, S-T-A-R-T page.com.
Okay,
and,
very good.
And they're about 90-95% as efficient and effective
okay,
as Google
great.
At returning those search hits. But I figure even if they were only 10% as effective, it would be worth it.
It'd be worth it, right.
Google sum. Yeah. But here's what I want you to search for using Start page. Look up an essay by, I can't remember his first name, Alfred Albert Nock, N-O-C-K. I think I got that right, but I know the name of it. It is called Isaiah's Job. Isaiah's Job. It was written in the 1930s, and it is the most inspirational, keep you going kind of piece I think I've ever read. And what I love about this this essay is it talks about Isaiah, of course, Isaiah from the Bible, and his experience of God telling him, listen, you've got to go out there and tell these people these things, and you've got a remnant, and they're going to be... And he said, there's nobody out there, God. You're not understanding. There's nobody hearing me. not a soul. There's
That's
nobody
right.
there.
Yeah.
And God said, you have no way of knowing this, but I know it. When you speak, when you go out there with your message, you are reaching people that you will never hear from. They will never call you up and thank you. You will never even know that they existed. But they're there, and they're relying on you, and they're depending on you to be a source of truth for them.
Well, you know, I never thought of that. I mean, I really don't. I don't think that way. I go, geez, you know, we didn't receive many call-ins. No one's listening, and that's not true.
That is not true.
Yeah,
absolutely not true. I mean, look, you're getting email from China.
Yeah. I know I mean, it was so moving, that email, the way he wrote it, and he basically pleaded with me, and he was. Relaying how much the words were needed where they were. And I, you know, it was just an absolutely moving. I saved that one. In fact, I showed it to my wife, and she said, that's an incredible email. I never read this
over the
air because I thought it was, you know, just too moving.
Well, that's the kind that you take that email, you copy the text, you put it onto a nice 8.5 by 11, you blow it up, and then you frame it.
You know I'm going to do that.
I have things like that around my house that keep me going when I feel discouraged. And I look at them. I have Bible passages. I have quotes from people. And whenever I'm thinking, Lord, what am I doing? Am I wasting my time? Am I banging my head against a wall? We're losing. Yeah. And I look at those emails, and I look at the things that I've posted around my house, and I think, okay, I know why I'm doing this. Yeah. I know absolutely why I do this. Can you imagine how terrible it would be for that guy if there were nobody speaking the truth?
That's
how
true.
Lonely it would
yeah,
be
that's
then.
True. That's
you
true.
Know, think about in under Stalin in the Soviet Union. If you spoke the truth, you'd be, you know, a black sedan would drive up at 2 a.m. and you'd be disappeared.
Right.
So nobody could speak the truth. It must have been incredibly lonely to know something was wrong and yet look around. And in your heart, you must have thought, maybe those people believe the same way I do. But maybe they don't. Maybe I am the only one. Maybe I'm alone. And wouldn't that be just the ultimate horror to know these things and to have no one to share them with or no one else got it? Yeah. So the good news, and I think the reason why voices like ours must continue to proclaim these truths loudly, is that it lets other people know they're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of what I've been talking about lately to people in our boat, you know, because it's so frustrating. You talk to 100 people and maybe 2 get it.
Right.
And you feel like, well, gosh, those other 98, if I could just sit them down, if I could just change them. But the thing is, their hearts won't change. Their minds won't change.
Right.
The Bible has a phrase that's repeated often in the New Testament. It says, let he who has an ear hear. And I finally got that. I finally got that what God is saying there is that there are many people who do not even have ears. You could play a symphony for them. You could get a Stradivarius violin and play a perfect piece of music for them. You could give them the perfect liberty message crafted directly from the hand of God. And if they do not have ears, they will not hear it. They can't.
Yeah.
So there's literally no organ for the information to penetrate into their brains. So what I finally concluded from that is my job, let's say there is 100 people. My job is to find the hungry ones. Feed my sheep is what Jesus told us. Find the hungry ones.
That's right.
Feed them.
Yeah.
You know, don't shove food down the throats of people who think they're full and don't want it. Find the ones who are hungry. And what you'll find is that if you change your mindset from convincing the public, quote-unquote, to instead finding each other, because we're out there. There's millions of us in this country. Finding each other should be our goal. And what that means is if you have 100 people, you go, are you interested? No, not you. Okay, you, no, you, no. Mm. How about you? Oh, yes, thank you. I've been waiting for somebody to give me this information. Then bingo, you just scored a success. So your goal is quickly discard the people who do not hear you. Plant a seed, go ahead, because it's never a bad idea to plant a seed, and those seeds may sprout later on, and somebody else may reap the benefit when those people come around. But for us, each day individually as we talk to people, blow off the people who don't hear you. And focus your attention on those few people who are starving or like sponges who lean forward and say, tell me more. Those are the people we need to put our energy into. Because ultimately, they're the only people that matter. You know, in any battle, in any social or cultural battle, you've got a handful of folks on the good side and a handful of folks on the bad side. And they're conducting this sort of high-level warfare while all of the rest of the public is just pawns being buffeted around
by these
battles. And those pawns are irrelevant. I mean, they're children of God, and He loves them, and He wants to save them and everything else. So I'm not minimizing their importance on a fundamental level. But in terms of the battle, they do not matter. Because they're not fighting for the other side any more than they're fighting for our side. You know, people are sitting around watching American Idol and sucking down beer. It doesn't matter. They're irrelevant. They're not hurting you.
That's right.
They're not helping you. They're not hurting you.
Yeah.
They're move on. They're flotsam. So that's why we need to be focusing on people that we can bring to increase our numbers, so that we outnumber the handful of bad guys on the other side of the battlefield. Mm.
Gee, this has been some interview. I want to thank you so much for being on our show. I mean, I can listen to you forever. I mean, this is wonderful. I feel so privileged that you called and that you gave us some really insight to a subject that I was totally dismissing because there's so many others and I just never looked into it. And now it's on the top of my agenda, and I will do more to further this cause with you. on our radio program.
Well,
I promise
you
that. Okay.
Thank you so much. And, you know, speaking of privileges, it's an absolute privilege to have been invited to be on your show, and that this issue has arisen to enough prominence that you took an interest in it. So I really want to thank you, and thank you for all that you're doing. My final word of caution to everybody out there, beware of RFID. If it comes to you as a sheep, it is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Right.
And whatever you do, do not allow anybody to put an RFID tag into anything you put in your wallet, whether it's
right.
a credit card, whether it's an ATM card, and certainly whether it's a driver's license. Just say no. Don't take it, because
okay.
the plans that they have, they're all spelled out in our book, Spy Chips. If you haven't read it, please get yourself a copy and read it. You'll find it is not boring. I'll put it that way. It's a bestseller. It was extremely well-received by the critics. It's been called hilarious, page-turner, could not put it down. It's got multiple mentions of whipped cream. Elvis Presley's in there. We got talking plants. It's a very entertaining book.
Great.
And I
Great.
Don't think anybody will regret the time and money that they spend getting that book and reading it.
Okay.
And when you're done, you'll be an expert.
Okay.
We'll
do.
More than everybody else out there. So. All right. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, and thank you. Bye-bye now.
All right. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Let's see. Wow, that was an absolutely, absolutely terrific interview. Folks, we are talking about something that Aldous Huxley talked about in the book 1984 that we thought was so far-fetched, and it's going well beyond what we ever imagined. We should be very, very sensitive to this, and we should band together. Only if the people band together will we be able to fight this mammoth, this behemoth of corporate government America that wants to track our every move for their own benefit and not to ours. Don't be fooled. Wow, we've got to talk about that some more. Wow. Wow. This is the end of today's program, and we'd like to thank Rantshakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.